Okay, welcome folks. This is our first week of module five. And module five is all about coaching with our clients' self-doubt stories. When I talk about stories, I'm talking about thoughts, beliefs, repeated ideas that we continue to give energy to, anything that keeps alive the sense that there is a risk, that we've got to keep ourselves safe from it, and that somehow that's the only choice we have. So last week, and in module four generally, we were talking about ways that we can uncover those protective beliefs that our clients will develop as part of some kind of root cause. And so the stories sort of build on those protective beliefs. These are the things that we keep telling ourselves that keep those protective beliefs alive. So in this week's module, and we're going to play with this for the next couple of weeks, we're really talking about how do we understand our clients' worldview around the stories they tell themselves. What is keeping that sense of risk alive, and how we can support them to feel around for what else could be true. One of the things I just want to preface this particular module with, and this work with, is that we are going to be talking about what we believe to be true. And there is a risk, I think, whenever we get into this kind of work, that we delve into some really worrying territory in the coaching world around, if you just stop believing everything you think, life suddenly gets a whole lot simpler and easier. To me, that's kind of magical thinking, right? Don't believe everything you think and suddenly everything gets simpler. There's also a real risk, I think, that whenever we are exploring our clients' beliefs about themselves and other people in the world, there is a real risk that we can end up kind of gaslighting them, right? By saying, well, no, that's actually not true. Or the alternative to that is in some ways even worse. Well, that's your choice to believe that. So that's keeping you stuck, right? And that neither of those options has ever felt particularly good to me. I've been taught very enthusiastically both scenarios by varying coaching schools. Neither of them have felt great to me. So in the way that we look at this work as self-belief coaches, we're very much coming from these principal tenets, right? That self-doubt's always there for a really good reason. Therefore, the beliefs and stories that our clients hold dear are there for a good reason. They're serving a purpose. Nothing's gone wrong, right? There isn't any place that our client needs to be or should be that isn't where they are. And also that, you know, the real way in here is compassion. Looking at how does this make complete sense? So again, we're stepping into the world of the client and looking at how does this make sense and what else could be true, right? So I want to talk in this first session a little bit about what to look for when your clients are sharing their experiences, what to look for that helps you to see, oh, there's something here we could look at. We're also going to talk about the importance of consent around investigating stories and then, you know, the willingness to explore alternatives. And I'm going to give you some fun stuff to play with once we get through this session. We'll demonstrate one of the main tools and you'll get to play with it in your practice pods. So I think it's the kind of stuff that we come back to again and again. So hopefully my aim is that if you feel a little bit crunchy about mindset work, that this approach will help you feel a little more peaceful around that, and also see how you can bring your own thoughtful values to this work and be of real service to clients. Yeah, cool. Angela and Sal and Vicky, it's nice to see you. Thanks for joining us. We've just kind of done a bit of an intro, as you probably picked up. So I'm just going to share my screen, and we'll start just looking at why we even look at self-doubt stories. What's the point? Are we simply reinforcing negative or limiting beliefs? Well, no, I don't think we are. So the reason that we do this is we are, by demonstrating some of these tools and by working with our clients, we're actually teaching our clients a really important life skill, I think, which is how to interrupt automatic, unconscious, unhelpful stories. Lots of us, we just kind of are out there in the world, believing our thoughts, feeling our feelings, without knowing that we can interrupt those in a really compassionate way. And so this is, you know, one of the things that I talked about in module two was this idea of when our self-concept is forming, one of the real benefits of coaching is that you get to develop a kind of internal coach voice, that sort of healthy adult self that we've been talking about. This is a way to do that. Says, oh, okay, that's one way of looking at it. What else could be true, right? We're also teaching our clients that they can leave the self-doubt loop at any time, right? So you'll remember our loop of what happens when we experience self-doubt. We're contemplating something, and a sense of alarm goes off that gets us to hold back. No, we can't deal with this risk. If we leave the loop quickly, if our clients can learn how to interrupt the story that says this is too dangerous for you to carry on with, then the client leaves the loop. They go, oh, hang on, I'm starting a task that actually feels a little bit crunchy for me. How can I support myself to do that? Then it means that they're not going to be reinforcing these patterns. I never finish anything. I can't do new things. I'm a procrastinator, right? That pattern doesn't get reinforced. They actually go off into a whole other paradigm and build something that is, you know, more possible, more full of nuance, more rooted in their healthy adult self, right? So this is a key part of doing that. Once you leave that loop, those patterns start to dissolve. Because the other thing you're doing is building evidence that that pattern isn't always true. Yeah. And what can happen then is that we actually end up over time reducing or even sort of deactivating that sense of alarm, right? We get to a place where we can kind of talk to ourselves in a way that's like, oh, I'm doing something that, yeah, I can feel that risk of rejection. That's definitely here. And we sort of climb a bit of a hill with it. It's like, oh, how can I support myself to manage that risk? And we can move into, oh, actually, I can tolerate that risk of rejection. I can find ways to support myself. And even get to a place where it's like, well, rejection, it's okay, right? I often, you know, one of my side hustles I will eventually do is to make some t-shirts that kind of follow along this path. One of them is going to be called, "But Did You Die?" Right? Because I think sometimes we do go down that kind of like rabbit hole of the worst case scenario. But actually, you know, where you get to a place where you think, well, I'm okay if some people reject me. Actually, if this risk comes true, that's not the worst thing, right? So that kind of progress, that sense of getting a bit more peaceful around those risks comes through, firstly, starting to interrupt those automatic self-doubt stories. Yeah. So our key approach is to do what we call a narrative therapy, thicken the narrative. I love that word, thicken. It has something in it, doesn't it? It's onomatopoeic. Some things to know. Self-doubt stories are thin, right? They're very simplistic, and they're often quite, there's not much to them, right? It's, I don't finish things. Other people have their shit together. I always get rejected. It's that kind of thing. It's not safe for me too, right? And it becomes a kind of, you know, just, I'm just reporting the news, like we talked about last week with those protective beliefs. They're often also based on what we call cognitive distortions. And there are three main ones that we're going to talk about today. But cognitive distortions are ways that we kind of manage our worldview. We try and control our worldview by the way we think, the way we see ourselves, other people in the world. And we sort of, we can use our intellect against ourselves. And these are some of the ways that we do that. When we thicken the narrative, what we're doing is introducing some nuance and complexity to the situation. It's like, oh, I don't finish things. I just finished something. What happens to my self-concept around that? It's sort of like, do not compute. Oh, I'm in some circumstances, I do finish things. Right, it's no longer thin, right? There's some complexity in there. There's some nuance. What it also importantly introduces is possibility, right? What else could I finish? Yeah. So all of this is a way of thickening that client's story about who they are, what's possible for them. Yeah. Just want to pause there for a second, just check in. Are you with me so far? Is this all kind of landing, making sense, feeling pretty familiar? Yeah, good. So let's just talk about three of the key cognitive distortions that I see coming up. The sorts of stories that I think are really worth listening out for as your clients are sharing parts of their world, and these are the ones that I see all the time. Right, so. The first one is all or nothing thinking. All or nothing thinking, right? It's either this or that. That's a thin story, right? We kind of lock ourselves in. What I've also found when it comes to self-doubt, when we engage in all or nothing thinking with the lens of self-doubt, is that the two choices we give ourselves are often a really dissatisfying choice. I don't get to do what I want, or I have to face this horrible risk, right? So it's either I never launch my business, or I risk no one buying and being rejected by everyone, right? They're my two options. They're both shit. Ugh. No wonder I'm stuck, right? Another one could be something like, I either remain single and I have a longing for a life partner, right? So I either remain single or I risk rejection or perhaps / disappointment, right? So these ends up being two pretty crappy options when, of course, there is obviously going to be loads more in the middle, right? But sometimes our clients will do that. And you can see the sophistication in that, right? If these are my only two choices, it keeps me safe. Not having to manage either risk. Right, just stay in the middle and stay stuck. I can put all my energy into all of the ways that this is crappy. Right. So it's dissatisfying, but it's still true. It still feels true and it's valid. Okay, globalizing is another one. We talked a little bit about this when we looked at protective beliefs. Always, never, everyone, no one, these kinds of stories, right? This never happens to me. This always happens to me. Everyone else has this. I have that. Right? Listen out for that language. It's going to give you a clue. There might be a story in here. it's a repeated protective belief. It's become a place of identity for the client. And the third one is emotional reasoning, right? I feel this, therefore this must be true. And this comes up a lot, right? I feel jealous, so my partner must be untrustworthy. I feel hesitant, so this is not going to work. Right? And I think this is kind of an interesting one when we start looking at things like intuition. You know, how do I trust my gut feeling when it feels like it's telling me to stay safe? When we want our client to be safe, but also to have that kind of edge of bravery, right? Where is that sense of unsafety coming from? If it's a story, we can look at how to support yourself so you move through that. Yeah. And emotional raising is an interesting one, I think, because very few of us have been given this amazing life skill of how to feel our feelings. We don't know. I know for me, I was probably in my late 30s before I realized that I could actually even name what I was feeling, right? And that actually takes a lot of work, particularly if you're, if you tend to react and then think like I used to do. And so, you know, for a lot of us, and I see this a lot out there in the world, there's people who are just feeling their way through the world without pausing to look at what options do I have here? What is this feeling telling me? Do I want to react or can I just feel it? Right. And so a lot of folks with self-doubt I think there is a relationship between that that level of an emotional vocabulary, a kind of ability to be with emotions and sense what it is that they're feeling, we're feeling. There does seem to be for people who kind of go straight into that those resisting behaviors, it's often a sort of a resistance to actually recognizing, what am I feeling? What are these sensations in my body telling me about my emotional state? Just being able to sit with that can be incredibly helpful. So we talk a lot more about this as we move through into module 8, particularly. We really go into emotions. But this is something to just be aware of. And I'm going to post the aspect of emotional, the emotion cycle, I call it, that we'll look at in module 8. I'm going to post that with this module because I think it could help enhance your ability to just see what might be going on. I really love Gloria Wilcox's Feelings Wheel. For anyone who hasn't come across that, it starts off, looks like this, and it starts off in the center of the wheel with kind of main emotions, the sort of mad, sad, glad stuff, and then moves out the wheel into more nuanced and more complex areas of emotion. And that can be a great way to just check in with how I'm feeling. So emotional reasoning is a good one to recognize. And, you know, the reasons to look at these cognitive distortions is because this is how we make up our reality, right? What we believe, the thoughts, the beliefs, the stories, that is our reality. That's how we believe the world is organized. And these narratives that we tell ourselves, they just help us to organize and sort of manage that reality. And, you know, I think it's so useful to remember. And you know, you may have heard of things like the Age of Enlightenment and these different ages that we've gone through in human history. We are in what's called the postmodern age. And one of the core tenets of that is that there is no objective reality, no objective absolute truth. Everyone has their own subjective understanding of what's going on. It's why you can have siblings that grow up in the same family have utterly different recollections of how that family was organized. It's like, because you just had your own experience, right? And I think this is so helpful for us to just, you know, kind of be curious. And I often find myself quite awestruck by clients as they tell us these stories, and you just think, wow, okay, you know, that's how you've made sense of the world. And again, all we're doing is stepping into our client's understanding of the world and trying to understand that, make sense of that. Yeah. So a key kind of question that you can hold on to, a key thing to really sit with is, you know, the way into this this thickened story is the question, what else could be true? Right? What else could be true? So notice how that can sit alongside the client's existing story. We are never trying to minimize, invalidate, or override the client's current experience. What we're offering is, oh, can we widen that perspective a little? What else could be true? Yeah. And, you know, in module two, we talked about what I think is probably the most complex theory that we'll ever raise during this whole program, which is subject-object theory, which can take a bit to get your head around. But essentially this is that when our beliefs, our stories have us, we're subject to those beliefs and stories, right? We'll see evidence for them everywhere. It's like, this is my truth. This is my reality. When we can, you know, offer our clients a safe and trusted space where they can explore what else could be true, you start to see that there is a little gap between you and that story. And in that gap, you can add some objectification. You can have a little poke around, right? You can slow down, see how that story is operating in your world, and decide if you want to run your life by it, right? Decide if you want that story in charge. Not in any way by disregarding it, but by answering that question, well, what else could be true? What could be more helpful? Right? What age was that original story formed? Maybe you can bring your healthy adult self, this part of you that we're getting to know, and ask that part of you what it might offer. Right? So remember, the healthy adult self is the client's most regulated, rested, and resourced self, right? Those three R's can be really helpful. You know you're speaking to the healthy adult self because they're being quite creative in their thinking usually. Their nervous system's regulated. There's a calmness to what they're offering. It's not like, whoa, let's get away from this irritation, right? I just want it to go. It's, what else could be true, right? There is a different kind of energy to it. So in our coaching toolkit for working with these stories, we've got three tools. The meaning-making map, which is, you'll get to know, I quite love alliteration, and I apologize a little bit for the cheesiness that might bring up. But there is the meaning-making map, which is ideal for looking at the past. There is the belief buster, that is the cheesiest tool I have, which is about looking at what's going on in the present moment for the client. We're going to talk about these two today. And then next week, we'll talk about experiments, you know, how you can take these new beliefs, new ideas, and start to actually enact on them to create evidence that a new future is possible. To create a more helpful, healthier future for your client. So I'm just going to briefly cover the meaning-making map because I think it's probably the most obvious in terms of, you know, it's so simple. And also just the ways that I tend to use this. So the meaning-making map is, it's about looking at past experiences, memories that a client might bring up. The memory can be from last month to childhood. It doesn't really matter how far away it is. But it's more about how can you bring your healthy adult self to offer an opinion about what else could be true to this particular memory. So on the top line, we're just going back to that experience. What do you remember thinking at the time? What do you remember feeling at the time? And I'll just use an example to sort of bring this to life. I had a client I worked with for a number of years, actually. And one of her abiding childhood memories was of being left to look after her and her sister from about the age of 9 or 10. She was raised by a single mum who was working full time. And she remembers thinking a number of things at the time. She would talk about feeling like she had to be the responsible grown up and also bloody terrified that she was the responsible grown up. A sense of fear and kind of like, oh, this is too much, but also sort of almost that parentification where you take control of things, and she would boss her little sister around. Interestingly, they would often dress up in her mum's makeup and clothes while she was away. So I found that quite fascinating, that there was almost like a wanting to step into the adult shoes at the time. The reason to look at what a client might be thinking at the time or feeling at the time is that you're helping them to access that. Maybe that 7, 8, 9-year-old self. Maybe it was them from last week and that stuck in the meeting and something happened, right? But they're bringing that memory to life so they can see what was going on. And what we may make it mean at the time of the memory is all about seeing how when we are kind of in a state of maybe upset or uncertainty, a little confusion perhaps, or frustration, we often make things mean from that place, right? I feel this, therefore it must be true, right? So all we're doing there is just looking at validating the client's experience of that memory, you know. And what my client made this mean in this example is, I have to be really responsible, I have to be the grown-up. And also things like, I wonder if mum cares about me because she's leaving me on my own. There was those kinds of meanings as well, right? What else could be true is about bringing your healthy adult self to this situation, right? If you were looking at this as a movie of your life, what would your healthy adult self offer? What else could be true? You start to see, you know, what might have been going on for the other people that were involved. What did the client need to hear at that time that maybe she wasn't able to access? What is it that is also true about this situation that maybe wasn't seen in the moment of it? And like for my client, she could say, oh my goodness, my mum was raising two quite gobby kids in the 80s as a single parent and working full time. We were probably a lot. She probably needed a break every now and then. And she left us alone. That wasn't great. Like, all of those things can be true. You can also say, what did I need to hear at the time? Oh, you know, if you need help, here's what to do. If you need to call the neighbor, here's what to do. Right? All of those kinds of things. You know, what else does this situation offer to you about who you are as a result of it? And, you know, my client was able to see, gosh, I can see that I took on quite a lot as a kid. Like, and that always felt like a lot at the time, but it also built some self-reliance. Like, I'm pretty good on my own. I can do things on my own, right? So you start to see that there is nuance, there's complexity with this situation. So a memory that could start off as a thin story gets to be thickened, gets to be, you get to see that you can bring some compassion and some wisdom. You know, your healthiest adult self is going to have an opinion around this. It can really soften the experience of that memory. So when our clients are offering this up, you can just say, hey, would you like to look at that memory and maybe see what perspective we can bring to it? Right? You can start to see that the memory can shift from something that feels like it has us, like this awful thing happened, to something where, oh yeah, that wasn't great. And also I can see this wider picture. Doesn't take away the fear of it or the uncertainty or the confusion that we might have experienced as kids, but we can also see that the other perspectives, perhaps of the other people that were involved. Just want to pause there and just check in around looking at past experiences with clients. How's that feeling for you? Thoughts, questions?
I think I still really worry about, sometimes wonder again, maybe it's my messaging and when I bring people in, whether that's something they expect me to cover. You know, from a coaching perspective, they're like, well, I'm here to come up with a to-do list and, you know, create actions. And like, I'm not here to pontificate about the past. And, you know, maybe I'm working with a therapist. I'm a bit like, oh, I don't know if they're expecting that of me and if, like, how to even get it to that if I know it would be helpful.
Yeah. How might you know if this is going to be helpful?
Usually because I can see we're coming up against a block and something is not shifting and not changing for all the plans and forward thinking that we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've often found as well, like, so just one thing to reassure you, because I really understand this, we're looking at the past through the context of a coaching boundary. So we're bringing who we are now, our most resourced self, to a past situation, right? Not to like process the shit out of it, but to kind of offer ourselves a wider perspective, offer the client a wider perspective. So one of the things I will always do is trust my client. So if they're coming up against a block, you know, as you say, like trying to get a to-do list done, something like that, and it's like there's something there, something that they're a bit stuck with it, I might ask a question like, what does this remind you of? Right? Has there been instances, maybe quite far back, where you wanted to do something like this, but you could, it might not have been your to-do list, but something where either the emotions are similar or the risk is similar. What does this remind you of? And you can say, would you like to look at that? Maybe see if there's a relationship, you know, and see what the client offers, right? Because we don't arrive in a vacuum, right? So it's almost like if you can hold some relaxation around, hey, look, you know, we're the sum of all of our experiences. So we don't really know what's led to the stuckness, but this is something you're talking about. So maybe we should explore it. Maybe we'll see what that can unlock, right? Because I know that one of the things your clients will be coming to you for is help with the things that they can't do themselves. And one of the reasons they won't be able to do it themselves is because it might be unconscious or they've just not thought about that. Because they're very action-oriented and they're good at getting shit done. Right, but maybe not so great at going, why can't I do that thing? Right, everything when you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So it might be, I'll just hammer away at it and hope that I can bust through. When actually, there may be a whole different tool that you need to look at this that could be just as helpful. And, you know, this is why I think consent is really important with this stuff, as you can say, would you like to just have a little look at that? You know, we can just see what that was all about and see if it has a relationship with what's coming up now. And if a client says, no, I'm not really interested in looking at that, it's like, hey, just know that if you ever did want to look at that, that's available. We can do that. And we're doing it through the lens of coaching. It's not about processing trauma so much as it is understanding how your experiences have led you to the way you're responding in the here and now. Does it help you, Vicky? Yeah. The three R's, resourced, regulated, and rested. Right? And often two will be present. Right? They're pretty regulated, pretty resourced, absolutely knackered, right? And then you'll see that actually enacting on something can feel like too much work. It's like, oh, okay. So maybe not today, right? Maybe today isn't the day, right? But it's like, oh, it's so good to know that you can if you choose. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah, Angela.
I'm wondering if you can just share a little bit more about what you were just sharing. We're not here to process our client's trauma. And where I hit up against is, where does coaching end and therapy begin? You know, and especially because I do talk a lot about trauma, and that's been part of my research. And I also get that part of my hesitation was from feedback from an individual who her feedback was not accurate. And I can feel that I really absorbed. She was a therapist. She's like, you can't really be talking about this. Like, this is out of your scope of practice. And I really took that to heart. And I don't think that she's accurate. But so I feel a bit afraid of, like, what does this remind you of? And then they come up with some horrific experience or memory. I'm like, oh, shit, what do I do now?
Okay, so two things I want to address. One is just this question, where does coaching end and therapy begin? Mm-hmm. It's a really blurred space for me too, Angela. Like, I don't know, to be honest. What I would say is, while I don't think there is a nice soundbitey answer to that, mm-hmm. I think you can feel it. You can feel when you're going beyond your own scope, right? Mm-hmm. And you've given a great example of that, which I want to come to. But I think that for every single coach, you're all going to have your own experiences, your own training, your own background and skill set. That means that question of where is the line between therapy and coaching is going to be very different for everyone on this call. But what I would say is, you're already working with clients who are whole human beings who have trauma in their biography, 70% of them on average. But we also don't know where they are on their trauma journey, right? Have they done a shit ton of work on themselves? And they're like, yeah, coaching's for me. I'm totally down with it. It might come up. I could feel some emotions. I'm okay with that, right? So this is going to be nuanced and complex, and we will probably make some mistakes, because we're humans with coaching skills. Some of us have some therapy skills thrown in, some counseling skills. Maybe that's been our background. So it's okay to be human in this, right? So I don't know if that helps you, Angela, but it's almost like if we're starting from the place of, I've got to get this right, it's probably going to feel, you know, kind of hard for us to stay in that healthy adult self as well. And the feedback that you got from your colleague who was a therapist around what's okay and what's not okay, the scope of practice question, you know, I think what happens is you start to see, oh, when a client brings something up, that maybe they do share a traumatic experience, right? One of the things that my supervisor said to me when this was happening a lot was, they've shared something with you. What's the most natural response you can offer? They've shared something traumatic, objectively traumatic with you. What's the most responsive, you know, the way you can respond? And to me, it was to say, you know, I just want to affirm, you know, that must have been really traumatic. Like, and I can understand why that might still be having echoes in your current life, right? The number of clients where it's like, oh, thanks for not zipping past that in a hurry, right? Thanks for affirming that. Some people will say things like, wow, was that trauma? I didn't even clock that, right? And so it depends on our clients, but when we can affirm, I heard you, like I heard you share something that was hard. I can see how that would have an echo in the current situation. We're bringing the client back to the here and now, and we're affirming them of what the situation has, you know, what might have led them to that response, right? And it's just something to recognize that, you know, what is your most natural human empathic compassionate response to a client? It's probably going to be the right one. You know, letting go of that good coach hat and just being a person, what would I want to hear in that situation, knowing the relationship we have? Can be like, you know, it's a bit of a relief, frankly, that we just get to be a human, you know? And you know, I think there is a boundary around coaching that means we don't tend to help clients process trauma unless we have specific skills and supervision to support us to do that. And you know, my feeling is most of us have a reasonable good clue as to whether we're encroaching on that boundary. And we can just say things like, I just want to affirm what I've heard. And we can also say, you know, do you feel like you need support, additional support to maybe help you look at that? Here's what I can offer versus what I don't, sort of thing. Yeah. Great questions, folks. I hope that helps, Angela. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else got anything on the old meaning making? What I would offer is that, having used this, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of times with folks, is that it's often sometimes the first time that someone has gone, what, there's another way I can look at this? What? Like, hang on a second. Often there is that sort of energy with this. You know, what else could be true? Oh, maybe it was nothing to do with me. And I was 11 years old and taking on the responsibility of a grown adult is often a response. Maybe that was nothing to do with me. But because I had a tiny human's perspective on the world, I thought it was up to me. Very, very common. It's what kids do, you know? Okay, so what I'd love to do is have a look at the belief buster, and we're going to go through this together. And the reason to spend some time looking at this is that this is the kind of tool that you can teach to a client, and they can kind of go off and play with it. Most folks, especially if they're new to this kind of work, will bloody love it, and it's always a really fun experience when a client comes to you and goes, oh my god, I busted my own belief, can't believe I can do this, this is awesome. And it only takes, I think, a few times around for people to go, oh yeah, I'm really getting how I can use this in my everyday world, right? Really cool. So I just want to share why we're doing this, right? So the belief buster is about looking at the here and now experience of the client, right? How a protective belief is alive for them, and how they can interrupt that and offer themselves the answer to that question, what else could be true, right? So all we're doing is getting the client to slow down and reflect on an experience without activating the protector, right? Often what can happen if the protector is really activated, that self-doubt, self-protection mechanism is really activated, you end up coaching resistance, which can feel like you're in a battle with the client and you're just arguing over how amazing they are. You are so amazing and capable. No, I'm bloody not, right? It's a fool's errand. Right, so we want to slow down, not activate the protector, and help the client have a little poke around with this experience with their healthy adult self in front. Yeah, and we're like supporting and nudging. It also helps them to understand the psychological risk that's present, right? That root cause thing, how that's showing up for them. And interestingly, I found that there is a correlation almost always between the protective belief and the risk that they are already managing, right? It's that it's often, you know, they'll have a protective belief, they're trying to avoid rejection, but what happens is rather than risk that, they internalize that sense of rejection. So some part of themselves gets rejected, for example, right? So the psychological risk is almost always present in the protective belief. It's just that it's sometimes unconscious. It always, it also helps the client to see that they're always in choice, right? Not in any way to negate how they may be interpreting the situation, but that they are in choice about whether or not they keep that interpretation or they add in something else. That's just as true, just as easy to believe, but maybe more helpful. I think this is the bit where clients love it, because it's like they can do this for themselves outside of a session, and it starts to feel like, oh, I literally am in choice. I am doing this for myself. And it can be really, really fun to play with. Okay, so what we're going to do is get a little bit of raw material to play with, just so we're not trying to fill in a blank sheet of paper here. So I've got a couple of sentence stems, just like starters, for you to come up with some raw material, and I'll be asking for a volunteer to come through the process with me so we can demonstrate it for everybody. So the sentences to finish, just to get something on paper. I should start ... A relationship I want to change is. My coaching practice will be successful when. And the last one is, if only I could, what? Just write down a few words, whatever comes to mind. Try not to edit yourself. And there might be one of those that that sort of sparks you. You don't have to have anything specific, just the energy of, that's interesting that came up. Who wants to volunteer to help us demonstrate this tool? I will totally guide you through the whole thing. Don't make me choose. You may feel completely differently about this thing in about 20 minutes. Who wants that kind of freedom? Come on, folks. Once in a lifetime offer. Who wants to put their hand up? Come on, one person. All right, Colette, I'm going to choose you. Just because I was eeny, meeny, miny, moeing it. Hi, love. Thanks for volunteering. I so appreciate it.
That's okay. I haven't even quite finished. It's like,
I just want to check in that you are okay to do this, because I've been banging on about consent.
I'm fine.
I just wonder, is there one of those sentences that kind of sparked you?
Well, the first, like, I should start and I just put Instagram because I feel like I look at it all the time. And I check everyone else's and I go, that looks really good. Oh, maybe I should do this. Oh, maybe I can do that. I don't do anything. I literally just put the odd thing up about, here's my holiday. Or, I have lunch today, you know. And I feel like what I really want to do is dive in about coaching and counselling and get into that kind of thing. And I'm not doing it at all.
Should we look at that?
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'm going to lead you through this and I'm going to be annoying and kind of stop halfway and then say, now, folks, this is a note for you to remember this kind of thing. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Cool. So, folks, what we're looking at here is the first part of the belief buster. And that's when we uncover, we slow down and look at our client Colette's experience of whatever the protective belief is, which we'll nut out in a second. And then we can look at what else could be true? What's a more helpful way of doing this? So I just want to lead Colette through this and we'll just see what comes up. Yeah. So Colette, there's something in here about the context of looking at Instagram.
Yeah.
So you're looking at Instagram. So when I say the factual, neutral reality that led to the belief, this is the thing that's going on in the world outside of our client that they are then interpreting in some way, right? So in this case, we can say that maybe the factual, neutral reality is Instagram exists.
Yeah.
Right? Make sense?
Yeah.
And then what is that one sentence, thin story that you have right now when you think about Instagram exists?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
What is that one sentence, kind of thin story that comes up for you? How do you interpret that for you, your experience?
Instagram existing. And most people have really good content. But not me.
Nice. Yeah. That feels really coherent with how you were describing it before. Yeah. So most people have really good content. I'm just writing all of this down so I get it. Really good content, but not me. Cool.
And I mean, to expand on that, I know that not everybody does, but the people I'm looking at, the people I want to kind of, you know, I look at and go, yeah, that's where I want to be, those people. Yeah.
Totally. Got it. So when you believe that protective belief, that thin story, right, most people have really good content, but not me, how do you feel?
How do I feel? Like I'm not able to get there. Like this is a real stumbling block. Right. I'm held back. Mm. And I want to kind of break through. And I'm not quite sure how to do that.
So I'm hearing emotions like defeat or frustration. Yeah.
Frustration, I think, more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for everyone watching, just notice our clients will often think their feelings.
Yeah.
Right? We all do, because we're trying to make sense of this thing that's in our bodies that's hard sometimes to describe. So we want to reflect back. Well, here's the emotions I'm hearing. What you're doing is also helping your client to name that for themselves. And again, loving detachment, I'm just going to offer some stuff up and see what lands, right? So Colette, for you, there was something in there about frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And so when you're feeling frustrated about the fact that everyone else on Instagram has really good content but not you.
Yeah.
What do you say or do as a result?
I keep checking everyone else's Instagram and I don't post anything.
So you're checking everyone else.
Yeah, checking. Particularly, you know, if there's certain accounts that I think are really good, I'll just keep checking them and going, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. I could do this.
Yeah.
So I'm getting ideas.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're getting inspired.
Yeah.
Getting inspired. And I wonder then, do you act on that, or is it almost like, oh, I'm saving that for later?
Yeah, so I sometimes will make notes and things, not about their content, about what's come up for me, but you know, what I could, oh, that leads me to this, and I could maybe do this.
Right.
So lots of thinking.
Yeah.
And they're doing.
Yeah, got it. How do you feel or think about yourself? How do you treat yourself when you're
feeling that pressure? And also, I have to say, just an added thing is, I'm not very techy either. So there's, and then comes in like my age seems to come in, and I'm going, am I too old for this game? Like, what am I doing? Trying to teach myself this stuff. And it's, you know, which I kind of logically know isn't true, but it still creeps in.
Yeah. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Cause I'm actually hearing some all or nothing thinking there. Right.
Yeah.
Like the tech is too much, I must be too old, right? So either I face the overwhelm of the tech, or the reality that I'm just too old for this.
Yeah, and the reality is I know that I could learn it. You know, I did my own website by just Googling, so I know I can do it.
Yeah.
It just takes me a really long time.
Right, okay. Notice that, right? Like, oh, you're already coming up with evidence that you've done it before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's like I built my website. It took too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So folks, what I'm doing here is getting a sense of what's the evidence or the kind of outside the outside led, what am I trying to say here? Well, let me say this more clearer. The top line is what's going on inside the client, right? The bottom line is what we see in the world as a result, right? So what we're trying to do with number four, that behaviors, is look at, you know, what are the protective behaviors that are going on? There may be something in here that echoes that, you know, that second column. What are you doing instead from the protective belief process? So you can kind of take that process and add it into the belief buster if you wanted to. But what we try and get as much as we can in this column. This is usually the one that's going to be quite meaty, right? So we're starting to see, like, and I just want to reflect this back, Colette, that the belief is, because Instagram exists, the belief is most people have really good content but not me, which leads to this frustration. And because of that frustration and that belief, you're checking everyone else, but everyone else's stuff, but not posting, getting inspired and making notes, lots of thinking, but not any posting. Bit of overwhelmed by the tech. Also a sense of, oh, I should be able to do this. I built my own website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are all of these behaviors kind of leading to? What's the outcome of all of this?
The outcome is I don't make any progress, really.
Right. No progress.
And I guess now I'm thinking about it, that's keeping me safe, isn't it?
Yeah. I really want you to notice the relationship. There's almost always a correlation between the belief and the outcome. Right, so the belief is most people have really good content but me, and that's leading to no progress on you posting on Insta.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, just notice, what else could the outcome be? Right, I'm believing this is the belief that's in charge and it's driving the car. There really couldn't be any other outcome apart from this one.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense to everybody? Yeah. Like what we believe drives everything. So even if you were doing different things, if that's the belief, you'll still get the same outcome.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Can be a little tricky to get your head around, but the important part here is, okay, so we've got this outcome where you're not making any progress on Instagram. I would also offer you're not having to face some kind of risk. Like, you're keeping yourself really safe, like you said. What do you think the risk might be?
Oh, judgment.
Judgment.
Disappointment of not getting any feedback. The just confirming all the things that I feel like, you know, I can't do it, not good enough, all that stuff.
Yeah. So I heard you say, like, judgment, not getting any feedback. Is that like a judgment for you? That kind of almost indifference?
I think so, yeah.
So that's an interesting one to choose as well, like judgment. And I wonder if you're already experiencing some judgment, maybe towards yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's often the way, right, with these things.
Yeah.
So you can be with judgment. There's some level of comfort with judgment. It's just when it's directed at you. By yourself.
I think it's when it's directed at me about things that I feel insecure about.
Yeah.
If it's something I feel confident about, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But because this is a kind of a crunchy, sticky area, it's like...
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. And so there is this risk of judgment, totally true. It's a very valid thing to be concerned about, right? Either people will say you've got it wrong, or people will just kind of ignore it.
I think it's ignoring.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
If people have a comment, and even if it's, you know, well, what about that? You know, I can take that. Yeah. But it's like, if everyone just ignores it, it's like, okay, that didn't land. Let's go back again.
So... does that ignoring feel like judgment? Does it feel like something else? I just want to clarify. It could be judgment.
Yeah, I guess it's judgment and rejection, really.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe a bit of failure creeps in, because, I mean, it depends, obviously. If it was my first one, I would not go there. But if I'd done, you know, loads of them and still nothing, then you kind of go, okay, that is failure.
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah. 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 So does this help you make sense of why you might not be posting to Instagram?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the thing I love about this process, is we've just slowed down and taken it step by step, just to build the awareness.
Yeah.
And because, you know, when you're in that scrolling space, or when you're about to go on Instagram, you're not like cognizant of, oh, this is where I'm going with this. This is how this ends, right?
Yeah.
Because by then it's too late. You're already in that comfort, shadow comforty place of the scroll. Oh, the comfort of the scroll. It's even a such a fluid motion, right? It's designed to comfort us. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great thing to have a space to just slow down, have a look at what's going on. Particularly because our self-doubt is going to say, whoop, don't even look at this. Just get into the scrolling place. That's where the safety is.
Yeah, don't get into this let's just check a few more times on these accounts that I like, just to see that this, that I've got the right ideas, or that they're, what, you know, how are they different to me? How are they similar to me? You know, yeah, really interesting.
And you know, you think of any artist, do you think any artist, Barbara Hepworth or Jackson Pollock, do you think they were looking at art books going, what's everybody else doing before they started, right? Yeah. Any creator. Yeah. It's funny, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is that right now it makes total sense to me that if you want to avoid that risk of rejection, this is an ideal way to do that. Yeah. And you get to keep it. You know, you just get to enjoy other people's Instagram accounts.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep this belief, the last thing I want to do is take it from you. But I wonder if you want to maybe look at what a more helpful way of perceiving this could be.
Yeah, definitely.
See if that would help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So all I'm doing there, guys, is just saying to folks, well, look, it makes total sense to me. Like, nobody loves rejection or the risk of rejection. So this is an idea. You're doing a great job of protecting yourself from that, right? And you get to keep that. And, you know, I would just also offer, if you want to look at me demonstrating this with someone who was talking about a long-standing, very difficult relationship with their father, right? And the belief was very much keeping him safe, right? Is something that I would never want to take away from him. Like, he was doing a great job of keeping himself safe by holding onto this protective belief. And so, you know, sometimes our clients are going to share things with us and they're just not ready to shift that. And it's like, well, at least we know what's going on, right? That's great. At least we know what's going on. This helps you to see what's happening. So if you ever do want to look at what else could be true here or what else could help you, then, you know, just let me know. We can do that. It's no rush. It's never a rush. This is why it's really important to understand that where your client is, it's totally fine. There's no reason to move someone to another place. That's then us imposing a sense that they're in the wrong place now, right?
Mm.
And what does change even mean, really? What does it mean? Is it to satisfy us? Is it to help the client? You know, so consent's really important around this stuff. Yeah. Any questions about just going through that process, that protective belief? I'll just stop the share for a second and we'll come back to it, please. Any questions? Yeah, you're doing a great job. It's a really good way of reframing it. Like, and it's true, right? And the client can see that. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so let's look at the second part of this. Oh, hang on. I've got some helpful hints for you. Wait one second. Oh, yes. You can start this process anywhere in the template, right? So I do recommend that you leave the risk and the outcome to last, but any revealing a behavior, a belief, or an emotion around a thing, you can start anywhere and work forwards and backwards, right? What I do recommend is filling it in that order. So even if you start with the behavior, you kind of start in that bottom left corner and then fill it in. Fill it in on screen, right? You've all got the word templates that you can use. Then the client can see, oh, there's a relationship here, right, between the outcome and the protective belief. Yeah. So you can start anywhere. The goal of this process, this first round, is awareness. What is happening? Right? We're just slowing it down. Maybe looking at this in detail for the first time. And the outcome is not positive thinking, right? We don't want to go, right, Colette, let's get you a killer Instagram account, right? That's not what we're talking about here. It's like realistic thinking. How can you feel safe and do this anyway with the risk, right? The risk is true. I always recommend that you do it on paper because it slows us down and our brains can't usually hold this amount of information at once, right? Certainly a client who's trying to make sense of all of this. So doing it on paper or on the screen is a really good way of doing it. Because of the limitations of the tech, please bear with me, but I'm hoping that you're keeping up because I'm reflecting back periodically with where Colette's at. Yeah. And yeah, there's no rush to change the belief. There's nothing the client needs to escape. They're doing a great job of keeping themselves safe. Right. So really sit with that. What does change mean to you about this particular context? Yeah, why does that matter to you so much? So it's got to be client-led. Okay, so a more helpful belief, Colette. Woohoo! So we start with the very same context, right? And that's because, like, the context never needs to change for you to feel differently about it, for you to think differently about it, right? No person, place, or thing needs to shift for you to see that differently. Perceive it differently. So the context is still Instagram exists, at least for now. But we do start in a different place, right? Which is the desired emotion. So, Colette, when you think about the fact that Instagram exists, how do you want to feel about that? What can you access right now in terms of emotion?
How do I want to feel about it?
Yeah,
exists.
Well, that you're interpreting this for yourself, right? So Instagram exists. How do you want to feel? What's the
how do I feel? Happy and able to get involved.
Yeah. Able to get involved. In what way? Like, say more.
Join the conversation. So have something to say. Put my words out there.
So contribute?
Yeah.
Does that land?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a contributor.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if contribution is an emotion, but I'm going to go with it for the sake of that's landing.
Keep thinking about that.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, that sense of contribution. There's some creativity and some joy in that too.
Mm.
So if you were feeling like, oh yeah, I'm a contributor, what's possible? What would you maybe be doing differently? Or saying differently?
Yeah, if I thought of myself as a contributor, I think it would feel like the risk would be gone or smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can think of myself as having something of value to add, something of value to share, that would feel good. That would...
Yeah. What would we see you doing differently that we don't see you doing now?
I think it would change from the scrolling and the checking to the posting.
Yeah. What else would you be doing?
I would be putting out my ideas.
And what's coming to me is, you know, that process of how we take an idea to creating something we want to share. Like it almost feels like I can kind of see you like putting some fairy lights on, making a cup of tea and, you know, going through that process for yourself, like almost like analog on paper.
Yeah.
Like there's a real, I don't know, I always find that quite intellectually quite satisfying. When you know you've found the words.
Yeah. I think I would be enjoying it rather than dreading it.
Yeah. I see that for you too. Yeah. And I wonder that, like, how do you like to come up with your own ideas and and share them? Like, what's that process like for you?
I kind of do it. I do it behind the scenes a bit, you know. I kind of affirm other people, and share with them, but I don't do it for myself.
I kind of love that. I'm imagining that, like, that behind the scenes process of, you know, for some reason, yeah, I've associated this. I'm totally projecting fairy lights and tea, right? But there's something about an almost like cozy creation process for you.
Yeah.
Where you get to like look at the ideas you've gathered and see what you want to share today and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that kind of land for you in terms of how you like to create? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of, you know, just kind of sitting and, like you say, slowing down. It's like that slowing down and really being thoughtful and making myself comfortable with the tea, with the, you know, the blanket, whatever. Yeah. And then going, okay, today this is what I'm feeling. So this is where we're going.
Yeah. Love it.
Let it happen organically.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that too. So all I'm doing, folks, here is kind of bringing this alive for Kalia, something she hasn't quite done yet, right? Which is a process for creating some ideas to share, is offering up what might that look like, what might that feel like, what might happen if you had that process, right? And it's actually an improv game called Yes And, right? So when someone says, yeah, I could do this, and you're like, yeah, and maybe this too. Yeah, and it's almost like there's nothing's off the table, right? It's allowing the client's natural imagination and knowing to kind of come to the surface. Yeah. So you can just share what comes up and see if it lands and just play. Yeah. So yeah, that possible behavior, the things that you could do differently, clear, that it sounds like there's a much more like the behind the scenes creation process becomes a more joyful experience.
Yeah. And it's like, instead of working behind the scenes, you're just stepping forward a bit.
Going,
I can step into this.
Yeah. So then the publishing part of it, it's like, cool. I've done my fun, and now you can have it, world. So what's the likely outcome of that? If you were in that place of creating stuff and feeling good and having that kind of contemplation time.
Well, what's interesting is, like, just by talking it through, I feel differently about it. Mm. I don't feel like, feel quite excited about the prospect. And it feels like the dread is gone a bit. Like, if no one likes it, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll do it for me.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the key to this, isn't it? It's like, do it because you bloody love it.
Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting record of your own thinking.
Yeah.
And you get to do it in this creative way. There's so many like fun ways to create on Instagram now. You can find a way that suits you. Yeah. So I'm curious to know, like, just as we've gone through this, we've got this context that hasn't changed. Instagram still exists, but there's a desire here of to be a contributor, which leads to like feeling like you've got something valuable to share. Putting out your ideas, actually enjoying the process of creation behind the scenes. And that leads to a likely outcome where you're going to kind of publish and do it for yourself.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there is like a helpful belief for how to interpret the fact that Instagram exists that supports you to do this.
So the helpful belief, I think, would be to use it. You can use it creatively and just have fun with it.
Yeah, amazing. So I wonder if you can turn that into like an I statement.
So the I statement will be, I can start to use Instagram more creatively, mm-hmm. Have fun with it, and just do it for myself.
How does that feel to you in your body, just to say that out loud? Really good.
I feel quite energized.
It strikes me as such a different way of looking at this.
Yeah.
But my sense is that you already believe this.
Yeah.
That you could use it creatively and have fun with it and just do it for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the real key with finding that helpful belief, is it's what else could be true. So the client has to believe the belief. Otherwise, we end up in the territory of, I'm going to create 10,000 followers, you know, the kind of unicorn thinking or whatever it might be. Not that there's anything unicorn about Colette having 10,000 followers, but the idea that that's got to be the next step, right? The next step is actually just accessing something that you already believe that's more helpful.
Yeah.
That keeps
interestingly, I had never even thought about followers. That doesn't even enter my head. It's right. About landing with the people that needs to land with, you know. Exactly. yeah
well, and just being creative.
Yeah
exactly. So just for folks watching, that it's very much about supporting the client to find out what's another way of looking at this is basically the answer we're looking for, something that's just more helpful. And because we've slowed it right down, right, and we haven't we've used language here like, what would you like to feel, and what might be possible there, what's likely, right? We're not saying, right, what's the emotion going to be that helps you, right? It's not antagonizing the protector who's immediately going to come up and go, oh, well, let me tell you all the reasons why I can't do that, right? We're staying with what's possible, what might happen, right? In an alternative world here, what might happen. So this language is important because it helps the protector kind of come along for the ride. There's no resistance in this process. If you are coming up with resistance and your client's giving you a kind of like, well, I could do that, but this is what will happen. This is what will go wrong here. Or I can't access that emotion. That's too high. It's like, it just means that your client's protector is a bit activated. And they're giving you some resistance. And you don't want to coach that. You're like, okay, so that sounds like that emotion might be a step too far. Like, if we came back from that, what might you call that emotion, right? Come back a bit closer to where you are. What can you actually access? You know, do you feel that sense of excitement in your body, or is it just neutrality that you want to feel? Right, so in this morning session, neutral was the desired emotion, and it was lovely to witness, right? Neutral is a very underrated emotion, I think, right? Just want to feel chill about the whole thing. Yeah. So Colette, just coming back to you, lovely, with this great new belief, that I can use Instagram more creatively, have fun with it, and do it for myself. What's the first doable step? What's the thing that you could kind of take away from this and play with to make this real for you?
I think it's just to maybe to post more regularly, so that I'm just used to doing that before I get, like, it doesn't have to be anything specifically to do with my coaching or counseling or anything. I can just start to post a bit more and then get used to that idea. Nice. And then go, okay, where does that go next? What's my next?
Yeah, love it. Yeah, it feels like a great first step. Notice how your client is going to come up with their own first step, and it's going to be different for everybody. So another person might have said, oh, well, I want to, my first doable step is actually to buy a notebook to capture my ideas for what to post. Right. Oh, and another client, right? Yeah. Perfect. And someone else might say, I'm going to go and post within half an hour of this call, right? So it's like, notice if you get wedded to that first doable step, right? If you start to feel like, oh, I need them to do something quickly because I don't quite trust that they're going to take this away. Often a little sneaky thought that comes in. Sometimes if we're a bit involved, if we share the protective belief, we can start to project our own stuff into this, right? Or we can want the client to do more than they're ready to do. So it's like, that sounds great. And a follow-up question I usually ask is something like, is there anything you want to use me for to help you take that first doorstep? So it might be clear that you want me to follow you on Instagram. I think I already am. And like your posts that you post. So you know that you're not, that you know that it's working. Yeah. 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 Really fun. Yeah. And this is where, you know, you just notice where you get entangled with your client's beliefs. Mm-hmm. So, Colette, this was such a lush and I'm sure very relatable belief to play with. And I just want to check in with how that was for you and how you're feeling now.
It was really good. Actually, it's just made me realise that it just doesn't matter. Let's yeah. just have fun. Let's just have yeah. fun.
Yeah. And often what will happen is, when your client gets to that first doable step, you know, the temptation could be, how do you feel about the risk now? You know, it's like, well, actually, I don't want to think about that. I just want to think about what I'm going to get on with, right? So you just let the client kind of lead that process. Yeah. Thank you, Colette. That was a fab example. Fab. Really cool. Really cool. So just some things to notice about that process is the helpful belief must be something that they already believe, right? This will fall down. We get in, this is also why affirmations don't work. Tons of research around this. When you are repeatedly saying something to yourself that you do not fundamentally already believe, all you do is exacerbate the gap between what you, your current reality and what you wish was true. So it actually makes it worse, right? So the key to this is to really check in with your client. Do you already believe this? Is this already something you can access? How is this already true for you? Right? Ask some questions around this. And this can feel a little bit clunky because we're going through a process and all of that jazz. You'll become more organic with it as you have some practice. And it's also, I think, a really fun one to do with clients, right? Because you're really just helping them to see how they can. It is safe to slow down and look at how your self-doubt is creating the outcomes in your life and to see how you have choice about whether or not you keep that belief or you add something in on top. And then you're always in a place where you can decide, do I want to be like, oh, everyone else has really great content, not me? Or do I want to be in a place of, oh, I can have fun with this, you know, and I'm going to create some evidence that that's true. Next week, we're going to talk about experiments, which is very much like just a series of doable steps, okay? Just to kind of blow the lid off that little surprise, right? How do we get our clients to stay in action with these things, right? This new belief, to make it real, bring it into the world. And what I found is that will fall down if the helpful belief isn't something that they already believe. It will be almost impossible to take action on it. Resistance will come up. It'll feel like they're actually creating different or more risks, and we end up in a bit of a fumble with it all. So I just want to open that up. Any questions, any queries, things you noticed, things you want to ask about? How did that all kind of land for everybody? Okay.
I found it really, really helpful. It was great to see you going through it. I have tried it out with clients and now, and it is really helpful to show them. I've got another client who is stuck. So I'm really looking forward, and I've asked her permission, like, could we use some of these tools in our kind of final roundup session? And she's really started to open up, which is lovely. So that's really worked. And I really appreciated you touching on the entanglement piece at the end, because I can definitely see where what's your new helpful belief and what's the first doable step. I can see where my entanglement comes in of, well, they're all nice and positive now, but this is going to be really depressing when they come back to another session and they haven't done the first thing. And, you know, the new helpful belief has just gone out the window, and this is all been a total waste of time. And, you know, like, I can see where I'm then layering into their, like, how I'm feeling as a coach and how that's going to reflect on me and how they actually won't stick to doing this thing. And, like, I can see where that all unravels a little bit for me and how I'm bringing that in when they're in this, like, oh, this is really helpful. Like, you know, like Colette was at the end of your session there.
Completely. Yeah, it's such a great observation. And, you know, one thing I've noticed about you, particularly Vicky, is you're a quick start, right? Like, you like to get in and experiment with this stuff, right? Like, for the last two calls, you're being like, yeah, I've already tried this out with a client, right? So for you, it's like learning by doing is exciting, I imagine. So for you to take action, it's probably something you're super comfortable with, right? Most of the world is not like you. Like, you are the exception, right? Which is a fabulous quality to have, particularly as someone who runs their own business. And I think I love that you're that self-awareness of, yeah, but sometimes that gets me a little bit tangled up with clients, right? So it's like honoring their pace is such a gift to them. Yeah. And when you feel yourself getting frustrated, or you're like, Christ, it's so obvious, just do this, it's like, you know, oh, hang on, that's me that thinks it's obvious. Yeah, what does this client need to hear? Yeah, amazing. Love that you do that. So good. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad it landed well, Angela. That's great. Yeah, cool. So I highly recommend playing with this in your practice pods. It's the kind of process that I know for me, I worked with a client for just over a year, and she just bloody loved this. And she was like, right, that's all I want to do. I want to bring you a belief and we'll bust it in the session. And we actually formulated a package for her where we met for 30 minutes once a week, and all we did was bust a belief. And she would do the first round herself, and then we would review that, and then we would come up with a more helpful belief. And it was so fun, and because she was just in it and really able to share what was happening. And I think that for a lot of clients, there's a sort of level of self-trust that gets developed when you can really kind of trust yourself to come up with something more helpful. It's really cool. It's really cool to see. So, you know that you're going to probably come back to this again and again. And I just highly recommend practicing this in your pods just to get the words out and sort of feel comfortable with the process. And you know, it's one of those things where, oh, we've not got much to talk about this week, or, you know, who wants to do a belief buster? Let's try that. It's a great one to kind of come back to. Yeah. Okay, loves. I hope that's helpful, and you're all taking something away from today. And next week we'll look at then, you know, bringing this into the world, the experimenting and the really playing with this and what that leads to. All right, lovely humans, thank you so much for your time, your energy. Colette, thank you so much for sharing. And like I said, there's another version of this in the morning class that you'll be able to see on the replay, where we went into something completely different. So sometimes it can be fun to just see the alternative ways of doing this. Yeah. All right, loves, take care of yourselves. I'll see you next week. Okay, bye. Bye-bye.